How are we doing, everybody? This is AJ Torres of Colin Strikes, courtesy of the Worst Take Network, and I've been playing for this one a long time, and, well, this is going to be an exciting one. Now, there's a lot of rivalries over at Worst Take. There's Seattle and the 49ers. This one probably gets, you can't get much older than this one right here. I'm a Yankee fan, and we have Chris Correa, a.k.a. CeCe. He's a Red Sox fan. And we are civilly going to debate the Red Sox today. And I will eliminate bias as much as possible. CeCe, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Before we start, I just want to say, like, I don't think our rivalry is as heated. I mean, we talk all the time, like, on Twitter. Like, we understand each other's situations, the Red Sox-Yankees, pretty well.
Like, I think me and you respect each other's feelings, like, regardless of the team, right? You got a Red Sox banner in the back of you. I mean, I wear a Yankee hat every day to work, along with Timberland boots. I'm a walking meme, for crying out loud. There's a lot of people that get the reference, and they do make chuckles. But me and you, we've always managed to do it peacefully. In doing so, there's been a lot more good on your end than my end. I mean, we could say that ownership or general management has been playing a part of this. But going forward, tell me, Red Sox take for last year, the short season, going to this year. What are your thoughts?
So last year was probably the best time you could have traded Mookie. Mostly as a Red Sox fan, I wanted to keep him. I think everybody in Boston wanted to keep him. But if it was going to happen, last year was going to be the year. I mean, the shortened season. I mean, imagine if that season was 162 games. It would have reminded me of like 2012, where like the stadium's half empty and the games are like 4 hours long while they're getting blown out like 20-1. So, last year was not good. We got rid of some of the biggest talents. We got rid of what I think is one of the most core. We had to deal with Ron Renicki for 60 games. But, I mean, based on what I've seen this offseason, I think it's going to be a lot better. We've already made a lot of moves, getting pitching, getting some role players. I think there's still a lot more moves to be made. But last year was so disastrous, I don't think it could get any worse than that. So let's stay optimistic.
Now, one thing I wanted to say, too, is there was a lot of teams. Like, I remember the Tigers, right? They were calling up some of their big pitchers, and I'm like, why are you – I mean, if this is like a tank year, right, where there's no fans in the stands, and no matter what, every single team was going to lose money. It's not like the NBA where you're going to be dependent on ratings because – I mean, the ratings is what they were complaining about for so long and no fans in the stands. The NBA was in trouble. The Red Sox, I mean, everyone was kind of in the same boat. It was probably the first sport that was saying, you know what, we're not going to do X amount of seats in the building, none of that. I mean, contract-wise, injury-wise. And the one thing that's pissed me off as a baseball guy is I remember so many years, right, where in a six-year span, they raised the tickets, and that's the cheapest ticket in the building to the most expensive ticket in the building. They raised it by, I mean, come on, 5 out of 6 years, you raise the prices, and a couple of those years are tanking years. I mean, as a fan, I'd be pissed. Yeah. So pissed.
Luckily for me, I'm here in California. I'm not around the Fenway area, so yeah, when that time comes, I'm expecting to open up the wallet and pay some big cash to get in some seats.
Now, by you, right, there's a couple stadiums around you, so instead of going all the way coast to coast, what would be better for you, Anaheim, LA, we talk in Oakland, or we talk in San Francisco? I mean, where would be the best place for you to get a ticket and see a game?
So that's closest to me. I'm kind of like in the Central California area.
I got you.
That's by far the cheapest. And that's because the stadium's older. The area, that Oakland area, is not the nicest. But honestly, it's like you could sit behind the Red Sox dugout for a pretty cheap price. I think it was like some tickets were like $40 last season that like fans were allowed in.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Personally,
man.
Oh, very sweet. I mean, I was sitting next to Alex Cora, basically.
There you go.
When I went to Dodger Stadium, it was the Giants against the Dodgers. The Red Sox don't go there that often, but I just love the retro feel of that stadium. I don't think there's a bad seat in the house just because it's an old school stadium. It's like all the seats are like pretty close to the field. And so I absolutely love that stadium. I know a lot of people rave over 18 or Oracle Park, it's called now. It's just the weather there could be gloomy sometimes, and like, but it is still a pretty nice stadium. I've been to Anaheim, that I have not gone to Petco Park, so that's on my bucket list.
Oh, I didn't even think of the San Diego Park. Yeah, but my only thought is National League. Although, if you've actually heard, now, I actually had a bold prediction of because obviously MLB is always talking, oh, we're talking expanding. Oh, we're thinking about doing this. What do we do about the Oakland A's? Well, I actually gathered a lot of research, and the reason why the Raiders actually went over to Vegas, now, mind you, Vegas, as far as revenue goes, yes, but Oakland was not giving the Raiders a new stadium. And nor are they going to give the A's a new stadium. So as far as I just read an article from The Athletic, and this is where all the baseball writers were able to comment anonymously. And you can say whatever you want and your name's cleared. They're not saying, hey, how many of the 40 writers are saying this one? There is a few comments that saying that, listen, man, the Oakland Stadium is shitty. So with that being said, I mean, MLB is going to have to worry about it. And I think the A's go to Vegas, and I think the Rays are going to have to go to Montreal. It's like, listen, if you want to expand the game, if you want to make money for MLB, you're concerned about debt, blah, blah, blah. Well, handle it and quit being old school and quit covering up these scams that you've been doing since the 1800s. Killing me.
Yeah. Like I'll tell you right now, Oakland politics, I really don't want to get real political, but it's very corrupt, and a lot of those guys on city council, so they're scumbags. Mark Davis, he really wanted to build a new stadium in Oakland. I mean, that's their home. It's been their home forever. Yeah, they moved to LA, but their original home was Oakland, and they were just not cooperative. Like, their priorities are in the wrong places. And he just said, hey, let's go to Vegas. That's a city that actually wants to work with us. And the people in Vegas, I don't know if you know, but they're pretty smart. Look at all the events they have every year. Look at the strip. Look at the casinos. They're all so successful. So
I mean, when you focus on money, when you focus about dollars, and you go by COVID aside, this is the biggest renovated place in the country. This is the biggest travel spot in all of the US of A.
Yeah, and like they want all this money, the Oakland City Council, and with that money, they're not using it in the right ways. Like I said, if you were to drive through Oakland right now, I don't know if you've ever been in California.
I've never been that far out west. I'm outside. I live in Connecticut. I've been to DC years ago. I flew out to Colorado for a vacation. Quite the culture shock around there. I've breathed the mountain air. I was on Pikes Peak. You're not allowed to go there anymore because they deemed the railroad of it unsafe. I went in there of a clear day. I'm on the biggest mountain in the world, outside Mount Everest. It was a pretty amazing experience. Saw the mountain goats, the snowy mountains, all that. But California,
awesome.
I've never really had a desire to go, really. Maybe a long time ago for like a skateboard trip, but now, and not so much. Not politics. It's just, of all the places, I guess I've just never said to myself, I want to go out there and live that California dream that you see in movies or experience. I've never had that desire. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah, it's very fabricated, this California dream. Like I said, a lot of people, a lot of traffic, a lot of trash, especially now during COVID, a lot of homeless. And even before COVID in Oakland, that's like one of the bad spots. And so,
San Francisco and Oakland's right across from there, right?
Yeah, the Bay Bridge. San Francisco is, I've been to AT&T Park a few times. You get off the BART train, which is a train that takes you, get off the BART train in San Francisco. It's like in the middle of the city. It's a couple blocks from the stadium. Outside of the actual stadium is the most beautiful place ever. You got McCovey Cove. You've got all these like baseball shops like on the same street as the stadium. You go a couple blocks outside, it's back to reality. It starts smelling like crap. It's a lot of homeless and a lot of drugs, I'll tell you that.
Well, I mean, it kind of goes the same over here east, man. Now, mind you, my father was born in Newark, New Jersey. My grandfather, interesting story. After his father passed away in Brazil, he did serve a mandatory 1 year in the military. Short year after, he changed his last name to Torres. And he hopped on the boat, told me about his fishing experience, did not go well. He threw the pole in the water. He basically javelined that thing.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he landed in Newark, New Jersey, lived there for quite a while. And sometime after, within a year of having my father, moved to where my hometown is in Danbury, Connecticut. But I go back to Newark, New Jersey. Like I went there for I had to catch a flight. And let me tell you something, man. If you didn't know, Newark, New Jersey's tap water is worse than Flint, Michigan's. But it's not being talked about because of the term Dirty Jersey. Now, listen, if you want to talk armpits, they say that New York is the dirtiest city on the planet. I disagree. But I mean, I work with old New York. He used to work the New York Sanitation Company. He would tell me all these stories. I mean, there are some things that involve politics, some things that are just involved the stadium. He grew up in Queens, born and raised there. I grew up a Met fan too. Big hockey guy. It's a culture shock depending on where you are. And a lot of the stuff is it can be a disaster, but can be an eye opener to appreciate things. But when I think of Oakland, like usually people are thinking like the Bay Area, it's similar to Chicago and Jersey. And it's kind of like some people want to throw in Atlanta and Detroit in there, but no matter what coast you go to, there's always going to be those areas. It's unpreventable because we're human beings. Going into
I totally agree with you. Yeah, but going back to like the relocation of the A's, they did set out a plan like 2 years ago talking about the new stadium right next to the lot where the current Oakland Coliseum is, and they have this awesome plan, everything, but it's just waiting on the city again, just waiting on the city. And honestly, if the A's do decide to move, it should probably be somewhere in California, whether that be like San Jose or Sacramento area. Because the A's, I mean, if anybody's going to be going to Montreal, it's got to be Tampa Bay. That's my opinion.
I mean, I just think you got so much in the California region. And with a lot of the bigger market teams clogging it up, right? Because if I wasn't a fan when the Anaheim Angels went to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. I'm thinking to myself, Artie, what the hell are you doing?
The California Angels.
I mean, really, stick to a name for crying out loud. And as far as I'm concerned, right, if you want to go by Los Angeles, right, instead of Anaheim, guess what? It's a Dodgers town.
Yeah, and listen.
Bottom line.
Like I said, you've never been in California. Anaheim is a ways from Los Angeles. You got to go down you got to go down the freeway. It's a long drive. And on top of that, a lot of traffic. I mean, they're not the same places.
And the same thing goes with the Bay Area, right? Yeah. It goes by, hey, guess what? This is giant territory. Right? Isn't the Bay Area, wouldn't that be giant territory? I mean, the culture, the dynasty in the 2010s?
Like, there's a lot of A's fans, man. And even throughout California, there's a lot of Dodgers fans. I think the ones that actually get left out are the Angels and Padres. I don't think a lot of people care about them. But the other three, I think it's like an equal amount of fans for all of them. It's just that the Oakland fans don't really go out to the games.
So with five teams in California, it makes sense for one to relocate because, now mind you, the Padres are doing well for themselves now. For how long until they say we're over our head or they take the risk and it works? I think it's going to be a little bit, but I think once we start having people back at the ballparks, now right now you're dependent off of TV ratings, which baseball's never had good TV ratings, and merchandise. Merchandise sells good throughout a long season. That's one thing that baseball has as far as leverage goes. But you got to depend on those two things if you can't fill in the seats. But going forward with that, right, I'm just kind of thinking – because the Golden State Warriors, right? They were in Oakland and they had to relocate, right?
Yeah,
they weren't grand new stadium, right?
Right next to the A's stadium. Yeah. They're in San Francisco now, downtown.
Yeah, so if Oakland wasn't going to give the Golden State Warriors, could you imagine if they didn't relocate? Could you imagine what that could do for that city?
It was already doing wonders for that city. They were in the finals like for 5 years straight. And like during the finals, the parking lot was filled. You had media across the entire city. It's like they blew it. And they're going to blow it again on the A's, even though they're a smaller market team. They're less popular. But like, come on, you can't.
I mean, I think it comes down to funding. You
can't be just letting these teams walk. Look at each game. Every single game for like the last 10 years. Their diehard fans sold out the Coliseum. It's like, that's how these guys, man.
It sucks. It really does. And if you look at it, right, I remember when Atlanta, right, they're saying, hey, you know what? We're building two brand new ball stadiums. Now, granted, I think it's the dumbest thing on earth for an Atlanta stadium. I'm talking about the Falcons. You have Chick-fil-A in there, but on Sunday games, there's no Chick-fil-A. There's no golden rule. There's no contract endorsement deal they can sign. It's just like, unless there's a concert here, you have a night game, which, you know, Monday or Thursday or maybe the playoffs on a Saturday. The answer is no. That to me makes no sense. But that aside, right, just remember, I remember when they were building both of these ballparks, they were approved, and I'm hearing – of all names on radio, Mike Francesa, and he goes, what the hell are you doing? You can't even pay a freaking fire department. You're going to build two brand new stadiums? You kidding me?
Yeah.
Which I mean, he's like, kind of right.
Yeah. Like, listen, sports are my life. Like, it consumes my everyday, everything I do in a day. But, like, sometimes you got to set your priorities, man. Like, some stuff is bigger than sports, as the old saying goes.
But at the same time, right?
Yeah.
When you put together those things, right? Now, listen, do I think that some of these billionaire owners should pay for their own stadiums? Yes. But if you are going to use these tax dollars to build these stadiums, right? Mm-hmm. For instance, if Oakland has nothing going for it, right? You're going to need builders. You're going to need all these tradesmen. You're going to need masons. You're going to need framers. You're going to need electricians. You're going to need bulldozers. You're going to need waste management. You're going to need all these trade guys and all these jobs. Wouldn't Oakland be able to use these guys that would quit their positions at their jobs, go here? Wouldn't hotels that have temporary workers, be in good business, the restaurants around? Doesn't it support the economy for Oakland?
Okay, we're back.
Yeah, it's definitely on my end, but go right ahead. But really, it's disgraceful.
Like, especially now in this, once COVID's going to be over, like so many people have lost their jobs, and even the unemployment benefits, they're not getting through. It keeps getting backed up here in California. People are going to need a source of income. That's the biggest way. That's the easiest way. That's the way that'll help everybody. It'll help the sports fans.
Building
it'll
stadiums. Help the
average guy.
Yeah. You build all three stadiums, you got guys working for close to 10 years. Got guys working for 10 years, yeah. CC, with freaking building. But nonetheless, let's get into the real topic of conversation. So how do you think your Red Sox are going to do for 2021? Now, what I got pulled up is I got pulled up payroll. I got active roster. I got acquisitions of the offseason. Where do you want to begin?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we should probably talk about like offseason acquisitions.
All right. So is Jackie Bradley Jr. coming back or is that a lost cause?
Yeah. Talk about it. All right. Go ahead.
Oh, my bad. Sorry for the bad connection. Is JBG coming back, JBJ?
The Red Sox really want him back, but I don't think he wants to come back.
Really?
I mean, he was basically telling the reporters that he wasn't going to be back next year. I mean, in the last game at Fenway, he told our team photographer, Billy Weiss, to get this last photo of him. He literally said that, and it's now kind of a famous photo. Him smiling with his arms crossed in the middle of center field by himself. I mean, that's kind of like his sending off that he wanted. So, yeah, I think he could get a little more money somewhere else, and his playing time won't be in question. Even though he did start every single game for like the past 5 years, there's always that question. If he can't hit, he's got to be gone sooner or later. I mean, a team's going to want his defense, a team who's struggling for a lefty bat, it's like he's gonna get his money. So and I think he really does want to explore the market outside of Boston. He's been here his whole career, not expecting him to come back.
I mean, you think that could be on the front office per se? Because one of the guys that they got rid of that I think no matter where you were a fan of, it was just one of those guys where it's just like, you know what? He's short. He makes contact. He makes good plays. Brock Holt. When they got rid of him, my buddies that were Red Sox fans, they were pissed. They were sad. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, why, man? Particularly with the Pedroia situation. Why you got to do that? And I think maybe that Jackie Bradley Jr. was thinking the same, that they were just going to get rid of him.
Yeah. Well, the thing with Brock is that he didn't follow up 2018 with a good 2019. So obviously they were like, hey, we've had this utility guy for all these years. He's very inconsistent at the plate year to year, but like he could play every defensive position and he's like one of the best teammates ever. You could talk to anybody in baseball, even when he went to the Brewers and Nationals. Everybody loves this guy. This guy loosens the team. I mean, you got to think about the trade-off. And I think Brock's defense and just his character, I think it weighs more than his hitting. And I think his hitting isn't even the most terrible ever. I think it was just an overreaction to save money. People knew he was going to get a good payday once he was a free agent. But, I mean, yeah.
Also being a backup.
Yeah, but, yeah, that's on the front office, like you said.
I mean, I think when you're a backup, I mean, I've seen guys do it. And I've, if you look at just the box scores day to day, it's very hard because you don't think about if the guy hits only on Sundays. Like when you have your backup catcher and you're like, oh, he's hitting 150 behind the plate. Yeah, but if he's only catching on Sundays and, you know, how many games is he going to get a year? 40, 50? If he's only playing that yeah. amount of games, right, you expect him to be fresh and mm-hmm. in the cage every single day. You expect him to do all of this. I mean, when you're not seeing a lot of the live hitting, when you're not constantly in that lineup, and when you're not the priority one with the hitting coach with the, all those tweaks, it's very hard to stay warm, get consistent. Especially, it's not like you can have somebody pitch to you
yeah. without
hitting. You got these relief pitchers that gotta be up and going yeah. at any moment's time. Particularly yeah, when they exactly. can't go five I mean, innings a game.
It was kind of like a lose-lose situation. Not really, probably like a lose-win situation where, well, let me rephrase that again. It's probably a win-lose-lose situation where the Red Sox would be missing that utility defense. They'd be missing that personality. But then they wouldn't be having to pay the money because the next year didn't a win for Brock, who ended up making a pretty good payday. I mean, so that's just where I see it. What happened, happened.
All right. So here's a good question for you. With Jackie Bradley Jr., you're assuming he's not coming back. So with the roster we have now, who's got center field?
Probably be Verdugo. I mean, Alex Cora has been saying in the media that he's a pure athlete, got a heck of a defense. He's got a heck of a glove, played awesome defense. I think in the 60 games that we played last year, he kind of showed it to us in that little time. He robbed like two home runs, made like three diving catches. I mean, they're banking on him to be a superstar. And I think he does have that potential. He's not there yet. I don't think he'll be there next year or maybe even the year after, but like, I think he has that potential.
The reason I ask is because that ballpark is different. I mean, I always thought Mookie Betts would be a solid center fielder, but the problem being is that the right field in Fenway, and I've seen it, it's one of the bigger right fields in all of baseball, so that's why I put him there. So my thought is between the guys you have now, right, we'll get into the acquisition that you had good facts about in a moment. But I wasn't sure if Verdugo or Benintendi would be going center or right, depending on the ballpark. Like, I could see Verdugo in right, but on the road in a regular ballpark with normal dimensions, him going to center.
Yeah, I think Cora, we saw it when he was the manager in 2018. He switches things around like nobody else. Like his, whether that's taking guys out of the game to put a guy in, whether that's shifting guys. It's like he's one of the great analytical minds in the game, I think. And so the only thing that holds Benny back from taking that center field spot is that he's had down years in all aspects of his game the past 2 years. I mean, there's no denying that. And then his speed went down. His defense went down. He made a couple errors. But according to what Cora said again, like I've been listening to what Cora's been saying really closely lately, that he shed a lot of his bad weight. He's getting strong again. He's been working out a lot more and more cardio that he could be due for one of those breakout seasons or at least comeback seasons. So I think we'll know a lot after the first month of the season, assuming we have a full 162 games proves that, hey, I got my body back right. I got my confidence back right. If he could prove that, he could possibly be back in center field, put Verdugo in right at Fenway, and then Hunter Renfroe would be played off the wall. I mean, everybody's last option in outfield at Fenway usually plays in left. I mean, look at us in 2015. We put Hanley Ramirez out there in left. I mean,
that was a terrible thing to do. Now, mind you, right? I understand you had Pablo there, so that was kind of out of the question. But if you didn't sign Pablo, you could put Hanley over at third and it would take the stress off him. But then when you found out left field was an absolute failed experiment, you had no choice but to put him at first. And then it's just like, okay, what do we do about Moreland? What do we do about, Chavez now, who I think has the job at first?
I disagree with you a lot because
really?
Chavis can't hit the high fastball. That's all guys throw to him now. It's so predictable. He can't catch up. His swing is late. And also, his defense is solid, but I mean, look at the other options you have. You've got the newly acquired Kike Hernandez, and then at first base, you got Bobby Dalbec. The one thing that they do need at first base is another left-handed hitter, which is why they're kind of talking about bringing Mitch back. So there's still a lot to be done for this front office this offseason. But Chavis, I could easily see him getting out of here. Even after you look at the prospects we have in the farm system.
Oh, yeah.
Got Jeter down, draft. He picked Nick York, who's a second baseman. You could have guys like there's so many other options. And if Chavis isn't going to catch up to that high fastball, like he's going to be out of here. Like if you've seen him at the plate the past couple of seasons, even in 2019 when he debuted, he came on the scene on fire, hitting bombs. Then near the end of the season, these pitchers started figuring him out. Then last year was just disastrous. So. I mean, I really don't see him staying around much longer.
Now, I actually think that's, of all things to tweak your swing and to face it, if you read the pitcher body language, a lot of pitchers you know when the fastball is coming, some more than others. Mm-hmm. But that is probably the one thing I think he could work on. I think he could get better at it. As far as Mitch Moreland, I'm surprised. I mean, I saw what the Padres were doing as far as their acquisitions now. But back then, before they said, no, we're going back to National League, the pitcher hits, I thought for $3 million they were going to pick up the Moreland option. So I think Moreland will come cheap for the Red Sox if you want to go with the reunion. But better yet, why don't you tell us about Kike Hernandez, who you mentioned. Top to bottom, what you got for me?
What I got for you is that similar to Brock Holt, he could play second base, great teammate, great utility man, has a lot more power than a lot of these other utility guys around the league. And I was the first one to know about it.
Yes, you were. So what position do you put him in? Do you put him at second base and just another fill-in spot occasionally?
Well, like I said, I've been listening to a lot of what Corey says. He wants him to be the everyday second baseman. So that tells me that Pedroia is basically done. His career is done, which sucks. And that Chavis, he'll be the backup. He'll be the platoon. And unless Chavis starts adjusting to that high fastball, I kind of want to go back to that again. Like you said, I think everybody in the world knew what was coming to him on some of these at-bats. It was the high fast. Although people criticize him for being a terrible manager, he's a damn good like bench coach and even a hitting coach. He played tons of years in the MLB. Everybody knew it. Everybody was telling him what to do. And he just couldn't hit the fastball. And this is why these first couple months of the season are going to be important for Chavis and his future in Boston. If he's saying he's putting in this work, the coaches are recommending him all these things. If that doesn't work, because he has such a long swing, he's got a beautiful swing, but it's just so long. I mean, he's out of here. And like I said, Kike is going to be the main guy at second base.
So if we go by long swings, Shohei Ohtani, that as soon as I saw him pick up the bat, I'm like, this guy has holes in his swing, and everybody sees it. Everyone can see it from center field. This guy's got a hole in the swing.
Mm-hmm.
So only thought is, right, if we go by something Pete Rose said, right, he goes, occasionally every major league hitter is going to get in a slump, but you have to figure out what to do. So he goes, if I'm being burned by the curveball, I'm moving up in the box. If the fastball is getting me, I'm moving back in the box. Mm-hmm. So he goes, listen, you made some Major League Baseball. You've been here for a lot of years. Why would you change your swing when you could just move around in the box and you figure out what's beating you?
And that's another thing. Chavis, people noticed, he was sitting back. He moved even further back in the plate than he already was. He was already pretty back there. He tried moving up. I mean, he tried moving inside, like crowding the plate, like maybe he had a better chance of selling it as a ball. I don't know. I feel like he's tried everything. It's so weird, but
I'm trying to think. I think I have one suggestion, actually.
Let me hear it.
Well, do you see him now? If it's a two strikes, right, I imagine they're pitching him the high fastball. Mm-hmm. How many of those were foul tips?
Honestly, not a lot. It was a lot of swing and miss.
Okay. I actually have an idea. You know how Mookie Betts has that Axe Bat sponsor deal, that endorsement, what's going on? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, a lot of people have Axe Bats. I know Pedroia was one of the first guys to do it.
Have you seen the handle?
Yeah, it's slanted. It's.
You see, I was actually thinking about that, right? The reason why the slanted handle helps, it's not because of the grip. You see, the reason why that there's so many things. Now, I've actually talked controversies with the corked bats. I was actually thinking about having a podcast or pictures or some sort of update of me myself grabbing some tools. And I was going to put little Super Bowls like this in a bat and see what's going on, like what happened with Greg Nettles. If you know about that story.
Yeah, like I know he had the ball. I know guys like Sabo had the corked bat just sliced in half. It's like these.
Even Pete Rose apparently used the corked bats. But what happened was in a game, he hit a home run his first at bat, and his second at bat he hits a single, but the bat explodes and Super Bowls came out, and they ruled the home run good, but they called him out. Even though it was a bloop single, and he claimed that the bat was a gift. Now this is, you know, during a time where these guys aren't making these big millions, whatever. It's like, hey, a fan gave me a bat. I'm going to use that to play whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So in doing so, right, I'm thinking the aerodynamics of the handle, and these haven't been banned. These are pretty good. So whatever. You think maybe the bat would help it? That's the only thing I could think of, is because maybe it's because of his swing, a little aerodynamics. That's the only thing I could think of. Otherwise, you're just going to have to stay in the cage and then just old school, just being like, wake up in the morning, just being like, hey, buddy, grab your bat and gloves. Make sure those shoes are tied. We're going in the cage. Don't think, just hit and hit the ball hard.
Mm-hmm.
Old school, not here all night, just don't think, just hit.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So I got to tell you about Ottavino, man. And this is one that I've said this for so many times. There's been so many people. This guy Giovanni, or I'm not Giovanni, this guy Giuseppe was breaking my guyoons about this. But what's your take on Adam Ottavino, a.k.a. Don Otto, being on the Red Sox?
I mean, I think you touched on it when we were talking before the show started. He had the chance to be the closer. And I think Heim Bloom, that was one of the big, one of his main goals this offseason. If you remember, Heim Bloom came from Tampa Bay, and they're the ones that kind of adapted the opener situation or have that short leash on starters.
There is a glass cannon to that.
I don't think the open, but I do think he will have that. I do think that he will have a short leash, especially on these guys on 1-year contracts, whether that be Garrett Anderson, who we just signed, Martin Perez, who we just brought back. A lot of these, like, on the fence guys, Nick Pivetta, who we traded for last year, our main pitching prospect, Tanner Houck. If these guys struggle early, then he might have that short leash on those guys, those newer guys, those iffy guys. And he needs to be one of those great acquisitions. And I'm hearing again, they're thinking about bringing Brandon Workman back on a really cheap deal, who we traded to Philadelphia for Nick Pivetta. So, I mean,
that could be a next factor this year.
Yeah, it's chestnut checkers really with Heim Bloom. It's like every time he makes these moves, I'm like, what are you doing? And then he gets these prospects here and there and these role players here and there. I was like, hey, this could actually, all these small tier possibly build something actually kind of good.
I guess he's kind of treating these players like it's a stock market. It's like, this guy is going to be cashed in for another guy, and slow and steady wins the race. I think, even though I think he still works for Tampa because of all the guys that he has, all the business that's been done over there, it's been, hey, you guys get our leftovers, give us the real deal. Thank you very much. Bye. It just seems to be the trend the last 5 years.
Yeah. In Tampa, they've been working out. I mean, 90 wins the past couple of seasons. And last year was a 60-game season. You saw they ended up going to the World Series. But Heim's still doing business with them. One of his main guys he was high on when he was back in Tampa was Christian Arroyo. When Heim left, the Rays got rid of Arroyo. He was with the Indians, hardly even played. And right as Bloom arrives in Boston, he picks up Arroyo. So maybe this guy knows something we don't know, but he's high on these specific guys. And 90 win seasons, they've gone to the World Series that the team basically he built. I mean, you got to give him some time to prove himself. You got to give him the benefit of the doubt right now.
You know, I'm actually wondering what's going up with Arroyo, because I thought he would have been having himself a role by now. Like, I've been waiting for this guy to, I mean, I know he's been called up before, but I've been waiting to see him get a significant amount of time at the big show for about 3 years now. I'm wondering what's up.
Yeah, when he first came up was with the Giants, and I know.
I remember, yes.
Oh, I'm in California on him. And so the deal that sent him to Tampa Bay was a year where the Giants were kind of wanting to go all in, where they got McCutcheon that offseason and they traded Arroyo for a prospect and Evan Longoria and Matt Moore. And so that year, the Giants, like I said, they wanted to go all in with those acquisitions. And their pitching fell apart, which is basically why they ended up not doing anything that year. So that's how Bloom got Arroyo in Tampa Bay. And I think they were together for only like – and then Arroyo went to Cleveland. He didn't do too well. But then this past year, he kind of did have himself a role. Rafael Devers, he had a bad leg. It came out after the season. Arroyo got a lot more playing time. And he hit like four home runs down the stretch, I think. Like, I remember him, like, there's a weak stretch where four of those games, he was in the little shopping cart they had in the dugout celebrating. I was like, maybe there is something here. I was like, we all knew he had the potential to be something big here in Boston under Chaim Bloom. Like, there's a reason why Bloom likes him. He sees something. And if he's struggling, Bloom sees that and is talking with the coaches to make adjustments with him. And who knows, maybe he could be a big, play a big role in not only next year's team, but like in future teams.
I'm wondering about that too. I want to see if he gets a solid chance. I remember the Yankees years ago, they had this prospect, Rob Refsnyder. Was a college, went to the College World Series, played in Arizona. He was born in South Korea. His parents are from the California area or Arizona area, but something around there. But they adopted him, brought him over here, and, you know, he was a college outfielder. But then the thing with Robinson Cano goes through, and mind you, what hurt his development and what hurt his confidence? They said, hey, can you try second base? Take a year to learn the footwork. And ever since then, third base, disaster. Try to put him in the outfield. Oh, they had a stack outfielder with too many contract players, Jacoby Ellsbury, Brett Gardner, you name it. But it's just, you go off of that, right? The main reason that nothing happened there is because of the destroyed confidence with him. It's got nothing to do with Brian Cashman, who's going to be a Hall of Fame GM one day. It just goes by the players sometimes and the system that's just in place by the coaches. And the contracts, unfortunately, you can't do nothing with. But with that being said, I think that Bloom could take Ottavino if it's not going well, right? Which I'm not sure how well they'll do this season. But I could easily say, being like, hey, you know, you want Ottavino for a good prospect? Here, take him. See you. Good luck. The chances of that happening is pretty damn high, higher than what I want it to be. So when this guy like Giuseppe wants to say, hey buddy, you don't know what you're talking about, what do you mean you don't want Ottavino being traded? Oh, have him good riddance, he couldn't play in New York. Have him bring him over a starting pitching prospect named Frank Herman, while they're having it too. They're paying $8.5 million. That's damn good money. So let's send him a starting pitcher prospect, fourth round from 2018, and Adam Ottavino for cash. Something that you're not supposed to worry about. Cash. I'm sorry, but when you're an elite franchise like the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, the Giants, there's a couple more, you know, the Cardinals even, right? You're not supposed to worry about a couple $1 million. This isn't Giancarlo Stanton. This isn't Nolan Arenado. This isn't Clayton Kershaw. This is $8.5 million, and you gave them to a rival. Listen, there's case scenarios like this where the general manager in the organization is so smart. If they tell you to go out to drinks, if they say, hey, you drink beer, hey, buddy, do me a favor. I need you to buy the beer. I got to be smart here. You got to buy the beer for me because I can't give you anything because I can't trust you with it. You might sell that beer for twice as much as how much I paid for it. That's how this works. That's how this works, and I'm afraid as a Yankee fan for this happening. I don't have a crystal ball. I can't predict the future, but if you don't think that's logical, buddy, I got a bridge in Manhattan to sell you. Come on. The pain. CeCe, the pain.
I mean, what a rant. But I completely agree with you. I mean, these owners – they're billionaires. Like, some of these ownership, their ownership groups, it's a whole pack of millionaires, and there's no luxury, there's no salary cap in baseball. There's only a luxury tax, and honestly, some of these luxury tax fines are pennies to these guys. And like I said before, it might not even exist in a couple of years. It's just, it's this is why baseball is investing in their homegrown talent, and they're just moving guys around like it's nobody's business. It's like, some of these guys, to get their peak success, their full potential, you got to have some strong ground under their feet, you know, have some stability.
Absolutely. So is there any more pieces that you would like to add to the Red Sox team?
Honestly, I think the starting rotation is honestly fine. I mean, last year, if you think about it, we got we've got Martin Perez back in the mix, Nathan Eovaldi. The thing with Eovaldi, you can't count on him to stay healthy. But then you also got the recently acquired Garrett Richards. You got Tanner Houck, the prospect who dominated at the end of last year. Nick Pivetta, if he's needed. So the common answer is starting pitching, but I totally disagree with that, with a lot of what the media is saying.
If anything, I would say bullpen.
Go ahead.
I would say maybe starting pitching if you want to get another top starter who doesn't have an injury risk. I get it. But my main focus is bullpen at this point, right?
Yeah.
Outside Adam Ottavino, right? So a guy that got ran out of town, who was their fourth best relief pitcher, who got replaced by Darren O'Day. I mean, I get it. I just don't know if it'll be the same. But in doing so, there's a lot of bullpen arms out there. I mean, Alex Colome, to my knowledge, and my surprise, hasn't been signed, and I think he's been great. Another hand that was dealt from the Tampa system, Kinsler.
Can I stop you right there?
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Alex Colome would be like one of the perfect fits in Boston because, like you said, he has that connection to Tampa. And then also, he's got like that Latin connection with Alex Cora. Like, imagine putting a guy like that in the bullpen. It's like, we have Latin players up and down the lineup in the rotation in the bullpen. I mean, he would be a perfect fit because last year we had a guy, Phillips Valdez, who came on. He was basically the only good reliever. Apparently, he's pretty solid. He will help out. You've got Josh Taylor coming back from COVID, too. You've got Ottavino now. And then if they want to bring back Workman, it's like, get Colome in the mix, man. That'd be a damn good bullpen to have. It'd fly under the radar to a lot of fans who are not in Boston. But, like, if you just think about it, all those names I just listed off, that's a good list.
There's a lot of names available. Like, Alex Colome, to me, of all the relief pitchers that are mentioned, everyone's like, oh, we got to go for Henrik's hand. And I'm like, wait, that's it? What about Alex Colome? You know, a guy that was a saves leader, you know, a guy that's been consistent who had – because if you see these closers, they're only having the roles on average for like 3 or 4 years. This guy's had the role for a while now. And if you look at everybody who's available, right? Like, some people are like, oh yeah, Soria's back. No, Soria's available. I haven't heard about any talks right now. Trevor Rosenthal, I think, is waiting on a physical. Brandon Kinsler, Tyler Clippard, Blake Parker. You know, Petit, again, a guy from the A's bullpen, AJ Ramos, Chaz Rowe. I mean, there's all these relief pitchers, but nobody cares. I think because no one wants to spend, it's terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible. But, I mean, the Red Sox still got some money to play with. Let's build up a Tampa Bay type bullpen that's durable, could fill all kinds of roles. Let's get Chaz Rowe and Colome in the mix. Let's do it. You heard it here first.
Now, no team is building a franchise around free agency, but if it's just a couple bullpen arms and it's just like, listen, guys, this is what we're going to do. The market's drying up for you. And depending on the guy's worth, right? If you could get three guys in there, right? So you have Ottavino, right? And if you don't want to go for a Colome, and depending on how this rebuild goes, you get three guys out of the bunch that you have faith in. One-year deals, I think the top guys, you give them $5 million a piece. So you have right there your 6, 7, 8, 9 guys. And then it depends on, well, everybody else you want to put in for the starting rotation, they go to the bullpen. You have your back end guys right there who get to reestablish their market again, give them motivation to do well. And I think that could really work. Then it just goes down to the lineup consistencies.
Yeah, I also think the Red Sox are in a unique position to kind of set the market for relievers. Like you said, a lot of these relievers haven't been signed yet. If you could sign Colome and a guy like Rowe, for like what he also is like willing to pay up money right now, then maybe some of these other relievers, like people realize, hey, we need to start getting some relievers. So pay a little more. And kind of just like be the winners, like set the tone, sign these guys, be the ones to sign the first guys. And you get the guys you want for cheap, while the other ones will be trying to fill their roles with the guys that are left. And although all the guys you listed are good, some of them may not fit certain roles on certain teams. It's just, that's just how baseball rosters are. So it'd be like, be a game changer for like the rest of the league right now. And I'm excited about that.
I think the best guy on the market, and I've been saying this ever since free agency opened, I said, listen, if you want a closing pitcher, you have got to get Alex Colome. Only difference is I think that he's going to want as much money as you can possible. I mean, you want to sign him now because otherwise there's got to be a time where good closing pitchers are going to cost the $20 million mark. Aroldis Chapman tried to set it. Nobody was biting. Thank goodness for that. I think you're going to get Colome for, I want to say, 4 years, 60. And I think that will get him in whatever uniform you want to play him in. For the Red Sox, I think you would take that and run in a heartbeat.
Oh, I want them to take it and run.
Ironically, I was actually saying, oh, this guy could be a Red Sox easily.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of expected that, but I mean, fish haven't been biting. But you're just kind of going to your front office and you're going, hey, how long? Killing me.
Oh, and I totally forgot about this guy. We still have Matt Barnes. I mean, one of the best middle relievers in the game. I mean,
Mr. Dependable.
Yeah, let's just build up the army of relievers back there, man. Like I said, we're in a unique position to really set the tone for how bullpens are constructed. I mean, I think Bloom already did that in Tampa Bay. Let's replicate it. We could replicate it.
Yeah. And I think Chaz Rowe, I give him 1 year, $5 million. Statistically had the best slider in all baseball. So I think those, even if you can't get everybody, I think those two moves, so $20 million on the cap for this year still are beneath the luxury tax. I think those two moves would put you in a solid spot. And listen, I think that the Toronto lineup is good right now, but I think that pitching is just not, it's just not dependable. And I do think that there's a Toronto team trouble, which I'll make a podcast about that once I do a lot of research. I know that the turf has been trouble for a lot of guys, which is why I didn't like Troy Tulowitzki playing there. You know, Mr. Shattered Glass. But I think the ceiling for the Red Sox is going to be I think it could be second place, man.
Yeah, it could be.
We don't know what the Rays are going to be because of all the guys they got rid of. And plus, if you haven't noticed, that opener thing, the hole in it, right, is it depends on if the first inning is clean or not. If you do not have a clean first inning, or if you want to go two innings, and you have to pull them because of pitch count or whatever else, right? You have a starting pitcher going in the middle of a game, which is not kind of his routine.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens if the pitch count goes up high enough? And then next thing you know, oh, it's the sixth inning. We got to pull our starting pitcher. So with the injuries that the Rays have been having the last couple of years, we don't know who's available for that stable of guys that could throw 98. And there's a lot of guys that are hitting the fastball. So with Blake Snell gone, with Charlie Morton gone, we're going to see how consistent they're going to be. I don't think they'll have the same magic as they did. With Toronto's lack of pitching, the ceiling, I think, is second place for this team. And obviously the floor, depending on the crazy part of the division where it always is, it could be fifth place. Where do you rank them, high to low or low to high?
Which team? The
Red Sox.
Red Sox? Real, on paper, probably third. But it was ninth. I think this year's team, what it like, depending if we get another reliever, maybe another hitter, it's got the makings of like 2013 Red Sox that went on to win the World Series. Because honestly, if you remember, a lot of guys on that 2013 team were like terrible the year before. They're all veteran guys on 1 year deals. And honestly, they just rallied around the city that year. And then after they win the World Series, they kind of like stunk it up again. Like, this team could stink it up. But, I mean, with Cora coming back, you saw what he did in 1 year when he first came in 2018. Like, veteran experience with some of the core players that have been there for the past couple years, like Bogarts, Devers, JD. I mean, they could surprise people. It just really depends on what the other teams do if they underperform. I think Toronto has the most potential to underperform. Like you said, they're pitching. It's still iffy. And then, but what if they don't perform? What if the big hitters get injured again? What if their pitchers get injured again? You don't know about Severino. You don't know. There's a lot of questions there too. I think every single team in the division, while you can have these expectations on paper, I mean, not everything always goes according to plan. And that's in every sport, but I think especially in baseball, since the seasons are so long, there's each position is just as important as the next.
Yep.
So, I mean, right now, third place. It could be higher, but I really like the third place.
You're absolutely right. Everything is completely important. There's no, we could let this guy in. It's kind of like when you have a mop-up guy in the bullpen. It's like, no, that's going to be important for depth purposes. Mm-hmm. Give arms a rest. That's why the mop-up position to me is bullshit.
Yeah.
But if we go even further, right, I'm going to name you a couple of names on my team that are invited to spring training. And I'm going to let you know what you think on this, because I am irritated. Luis Severino, Corey Kluber, Domingo Herman, Jameson Taillon. Four guys that could potentially be in the rotation. You want to know how many innings they pitched in 2020?
Not enough, because I know Kluber hasn't been the same Kluber in like 3 years.
One.
I know Herman. Yeah, I know Herman with his allegations. Severino, Tommy John, Taillon. He had Tommy John too, right?
Jameson Taillon had his second Tommy John surgery, and he did beat cancer. The last couple of years, I believe, has been two Tommy Johns as well as beating cancer. So God bless him. But still, it's question marks. We have Kluber, who, mind you, outside the 2 years of being hurt, he won the Cy Young. But that's not enough, because anything can happen when you age. You're in your early 30s. You're a starting pitcher. Do you have the durability? Do your mechanics still there? Yeah. I don't know.
So, like, the only sure things in that rotation, I would think, is Cole. who else do they have?
I mean, outside Gerrit Cole, he's definitely your ace, okay?
Yeah,
but course. Then as far as your depth goes, right? I'm okay with Montgomery, and I'm okay with Davey Garcia. But if we go by the other guys on this list that are rotation options, Clark Schmidt, I really don't know what he has. Michael King, I like him as long man. I like him in the rotation. Herman, we shall see, did not do well in Dominican League, but I also think, I think he could be in the bullpen to reinvent himself. Chausson, I don't think high of, but the big question marks are Tyone and Kluber. Now, mind you, you didn't give up a lot of money for him, but the thing that angers me is that Corey Kluber, for his injury history, right, you gave him almost $11 million. And outside of Cole, you got nobody to depend on. And because of the disagreement about money, which the New York Yankees shouldn't argue about money, guess what? Masahiro Tanaka Senpai is now back to Japan.
Yeah.
It's official. But guess what? There's something that tells me, right? You could have called Tanaka on the phone or get a translator, send an email, whatever. Listen, we don't know the dollar amount that was released. But the fact that money got in the way over this and you chose Tyone for roster spots and Kluber because of the ceiling over Mr. Dependable and a guy who pitched great in the postseason. And don't count that game against Cleveland against him, because that game should have not been played. The weather made that impossible to play in. If you saw the wind howling and the rain pouring in any other circumstances, and I've said this with NFL games as well, if there was no money involved in this game, that should have been canceled. That aside, Tanaka in the playoffs was great. You let him walk away because of money. You pissed away millions when you make billions. Why?
Yeah.
That's why I am floored with Hal. I have been for the last decade or so. Floored.
Yeah, and like you said, like it's like $11 million for Kluber, and then they pay Tyone cheap. They pay you could have used that money from all these small deals and that one kind of big deals. I mean,
if you look on paper, right, outside Cole, if you look at the money situation, right, you signed Severino to like that 5 or 6 year deal for $40 million, which is nothing, absolutely nothing in as far as starting pitcher terms. So you got Gerrit Cole, big contract. Okay, Severino, very team friendly contract. Montgomery, paid nothing. Schmidt, nothing. King, nothing. Garcia, nothing. Herman, nothing. Chanson, maximum he could make is, I know it's under $1.5 million. I think he's owed like $900,000. Tyone isn't on his big year deal yet. Hasn't hit free agency yet. So what? You decided to pay Kluber and this whole other rotation is getting paid chump change. You could have opened up the books with Tanaka.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I hate the Yankees, but like, as a fan, like, I understand you. Like,
and I understand your team, frustrations too. Like, I remember the year of Eovaldi and Sale hurt. That hurt.
Yeah.
Me and you find equal ground, and it's actually very rare for a Red Sox fan, a Yankee fan, debating for this long. Think about that.
Yeah. It's funny.
Although I will say, though, it's very interesting being in the Connecticut area and then being in the New York area. But my father told me this. Now, mind you, grew up in Newark, worked in the city. He worked in the state of Connecticut, but he traveled to New York City for quite a long time, was delivering across the street 2 hours before 9/11. So he knows his way around the city, knows the culture. But he told me this. He goes, the Red Sox fans wear around, but there weren't Patriot fans around the New England area. Well, they weren't there before 95, is what he told me. He basically had baseball and basketball. Hockey's always been small. And then it's like, hey, what's this thing called football? Wait, we have a team?
Yeah. But I mean, with every team success, you're going to have bandwagons and stuff.
Of course.
But I mean, these have always been big market teams. Like even when the Red Sox were cursed all those years, I mean, Fenway was still popping when Mo Vaughn was hitting bombs. when Nomar was the next big thing at that time. But yeah.
Yeah, I remember no more. Good times. I just got this image in my mind where he would, in between his shoulder and his jawbone, he would hold the bat, he would rub his hands together, and he'd be like, all right, let's go. Even as a Yankee fan, I'm just like, you know what? If he gets a hit, I'm not too mad.
I mean, that guy's body was something out of a lab. Before he got injured, created a picture of him with a shirt on. But man, like, you just got to think, what if he didn't get injured? Could he have been that Jeter level, better maybe? Because at the time he got injured, he was statistically a better hitter than him. But, like, could he have been able to keep it up? I mean, a whole lot of what ifs there. And then they trade him before the 04 season. What if the Red Sox keep him in 04? Being Billy Miller. I mean, there's so much stuff that you got to – so many what ifs there.
Also, you want to know what one of the biggest pains, and I discussed this with Matt a few times. If we're going by that era, there's two guys, and the Yankees basically said, we are not interested. Now, there's that big collapse in 2004, which I'm pretty sure you know very well. You grew up around that time. You started to become a Red Sox fan around that time. But there is one X factor that nobody talks about. And you want to know what that is? You want to know who I consider a career Yankee, and he wasn't there for that collapse? Guess who it was?
Was Bernie Williams on that team?
Bernie Williams was on that team.
Clemens?
Could be, but that's not the guy who I was thinking of.
Sheesh. I'm thinking. I'm at a standstill right now.
You're close, but Andy Pettit.
Oh, man.
So this is another thing where it bothers me if you want to talk money. Because if you're going to spend it, listen, I understand if you want to spend it like a drunken sailor. Like, there was some times where, I will admit, there were some times where the Yankees spent money like they were drunken sailors with a treasure chest full of gold. I'm going to admit that. The Dodgers did it in the late 2000s, early 2010s, as we know. We've seen it happen. Look at the trade that they made with the Red Sox, all those bad contracts that they dumped on them. That worked out for the Red Sox plenty. And I'm pretty sure that you're basically dancing and doing backflips because of it. Basically, the Yankees said, we're not interested in Andy Pettit. And what happens if Andy is on that staff? Do they go to the World Series again?
I mean, who was the guy who started game 7 for the Yankees? It was some guy they got at the trade deadline, am I right?
I got a, let's see,
But if you have Pettit instead of him in that game seven, it's like, did they go to the World Series?
I mean, just think about that whole series, man. I mean, just think about that whole year. Kevin Brown. And by the way,
yeah, Kevin
Brown. I understand that Jeff Weaver was not a great Yankee, but that was a guy who was about 40 years old. And if you go about it, right? Oh my goodness, what a freaking disaster. Because if we go by this, right? He gets pulled in the second inning. Another disaster. Who, mind you, he has second round. Javier Vasquez. Another guy that was a deadline pickup. Esteban Loaiza. By the way, look him up. I actually believe he's in prison right now. Then we have Felix Heredia, who is an absolute disaster. And then you have Tom Gordon. He gives up, two runs, unfortunately. And you put in Mo, he gets one out. Faces one batter, gets the out. I mean, lost cause. But mind you, right? You have the Red Sox, mind you. Here's the difference. You have Derek Lowe come in for a second win, six innings, one run ball. Pedro comes in. Not a great performance by Pedro, mind you. Somebody else could have done it, but he was gassed. Then you have Tim Lynn, and then you have Embry. But the fact that you had three starters, right, that had to cover the spread of six-plus innings, that's embarrassing. You decided to not have interest in Andy Pettit. Roger Clemens getting old? Okay, fine. I understand that part. But the fact that if you go by your playoff Andy, that wide stare, that lineup against Andy Pettit, I'd rather take my chances than anybody else on that staff that year. I remember the meltdown. It was crazy. It was infuriating. That is the X factor. If I had to label you all the pains that I've experienced from me watching my teams, I think that is probably the topic that gives you the most pain, because it is the biggest what if we don't know about. But even Red Sox fans agree that it would have been a harder time to play against Andy Pettit than end of the ropes Kevin Brown, not a good Yankee Javier Vasquez, not a good pitcher, period, outside a couple years, Esteban Loaiza. I mean, I'm pretty sure you have a few, but that's my biggest one.
Yeah. I heard you there. I know that. Yes. I know that a lot of, like, I'm trying to think of some. It's like, what would have changed? Because with the Red Sox, it's like hit or miss. It's like they could place one year and then the next year they could win it all. So it's like, I don't really know if there's one guy who could make, like, the biggest change for some of these teams.
Maybe a couple years where you could have had an extra bullpen arm, but that's really about it. There's no major piece where you've said, what if you're a Red Sox fan since the turn of the new era, the new millennia.
Yeah. I mean, but hey, like I take the trade off last place. One got in us. We got like four championships.
There we go. It's just how it goes. And who knows? man. You see, I think you've actually, I had a couple rebuilding years, but I think everyone got together and said, this is okay. Whereas the Yankee fans, they can't accept that, and neither can the ownership, and that's where it kind of gets sour.
Yeah, because the Yankees, they back up the Brinks. It's with some of these guys on the roster, it's kind of like, if it's not a World Series or at least getting to a pennant, it's kind of like, it's kind of a failure, you know. It's like there's a over there.
I think the only painful moment you could think on your end is
I could tell you right now.
Wasn't that 2011, Big Papi's last game?
Big Papi's last game wasn't really like a meltdown. I mean, I was really sad, but like,
no, I'm just saying that they couldn't give him to the final show one more time.
The Indians were wagging that. Wait, you kind of broke up. What was that?
I said outside David Ortiz not getting to the final dance one more time, and I saw him, you know, cry tears of joy, say goodbye to the fans. I mean, outside that, there's not really many painful moments as far as being a Red Sox fan lately.
2011, that's got to be the one when Evan Longoria hits the home run in game 162. I know I was only 11 years old then. I was glued to MLB Network. They kept switching between the two games. Carl Crawford can't even try to make a catch, throws it with an arm that he can't even use. Longoria hits the home run and the Rays are going to the playoffs while we were left out of it. We lost like 28 games out of 30 to finish off the season. That was brutal.
So we have David Ortiz last game, the end of 2011. And if you remember, do you remember the beer and wings incident?
Beer and wings. I'm pretty sure that's 2011.
It was a long build up to it. Let's see. Let me look this up real quick. Let me just make sure I got my timelines right.
Yeah, because in 2011, that's when Beckett was there, Euclid was there, all those guys, and like the thing was, they're eating chicken and beer in the clubhouse.
Oh yes, it was 2011, but it was the starting pitchers that are to blame. Yeah. Man, this was John Lester, John Lackey, Josh Beckett, and Clay Buchholz, which that guy got booed out of town too. But Josh Beckett's relationship, man, that's a very interesting one, because not only did you have the beer and wings incident, but do you remember about the golf incident that he was in?
Did he crash his card or something?
Well, here's what happened, right? Now, remember when Yoan Cespedes was playing golf, not near 100%, and then you're like, whoa, 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 this guy played 18 holes of golf this morning. So let's see. This guy didn't get proper sleep. This guy woke up at 7 o'clock for tea time at 8, played 18 holes of golf, and because of his injury is not in the lineup tonight. Many Met fans, I think most of them, were pissed off. So what happened was the Red Sox moved back Josh Beckett's start, but the next day he had his bag of clubs ready and he was participating in a golf tournament. They were pissed.
Yeah, I mean, like, how many times do we see guys out, like, look at in football, Dwayne Haskins clubbing after he plays one of the worst games of his life.
James Harden losing a series, going to the strip club. Yeah, we've all seen it. It's all never a dull moment in the sports world, and that's why we love it. But dude, this has been definitely one of the crazy ones. Would you like to sign off on anything? Is there any closing regards?
Thanks for having me on. I mean, this, like you said, this is a long time coming. We finally got together to do it.
Yes.
If you guys enjoy what I have to say, or even if you guys hate what I said, chirp me on SoCorea15. I'm sure AJ will be happy to to tag me. But yeah, I mean, it's fun. And I'm looking forward to the baseball season, man.
Yeah. And who knows, maybe we could start trolling some people, just hold up something, do like the Skip Bayless, just being like, I can't lose in these shoes. Just start trolling people with it, right?
Yeah.
Best luck to the season. I'm not sure if either team will make it all the way. I think there's going to be a surprise dark horse team that's going to take it this year. But in all regards to it, best of luck. And we will definitely discuss more baseball topics going on, the DH, the payroll, all this other stuff. This has been a wild one. And I don't think I've laughed this much hosting a pod ever, or ranted as much.
Yeah, thanks, man. I had a lot of fun, man.
Oh, likewise. This has been freaking great.